All right, welcome back to Defrag. I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Last time, we talked about some of the issues that we had. We took some good user comments that were in the feedback for that show, and we're going to go over some of those today, as well as a couple of our own. One of the things, if you want to get your problem on the show, you can leave a comment in this week's show, or you can email defragshow@microsoft.com, and we'll try to take a look at those, and we'll have a little team of people who scurry around and see what we can do. No promises, but we'll do everything we can to help out. So the first one, which was one of the things I wanted to start with, is I always ask you, what's the biggest, hardest problem that you've had to troubleshoot this week? And we got that question from D-Dub, who said, I'd like to know, what are some of the most complex problems Gov has encountered?
It's actually kind of funny. Some of the most complex problems that I encounter on a weekly, monthly basis are ones that I can't even tell anybody about.
So it's an NDA thing here.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like I can't blog about it. I can't do a lot of the things, you know, to tell people how, you know, hairy a problem might be.
And you can tell me, though, and you did earlier, and you, interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So one of the ones that, you know, I can talk about is we had a deployment blocker. An issue came to me after kicking around our support process for about a month, and an issue came to me kind of sideways. And we made a change in server 2008 R2, and this was a deployment blocker for a very large
company.
Very large company.
Yeah.
What it actually turned out to be was, you know, a change that we made that was supposed to be benign.
Yeah.
But wasn't, and it was affecting a third-party product that they used. So in the end, what I was able to do is give them a very small piece of code that the third party was able to incorporate, and not only did it fix their problem, but it actually got them in a more secure state in server 2008 R2. What the third party company did was turn off a bunch of security features in the OS in order to make their application work.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't good for, you know, a lot of different reasons, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So giving them this piece of code, they were able to make their application work and make themselves more secure. And this very large company was extremely grateful, because after it had been kicking around for support for a month, I got to it, and a couple of days later, I had a solution in hand, had it tested, and they were up and running again.
Very nice. So my big problem of the week, it wasn't nearly as difficult as that one, but you'll see today I'm using my main desktop, which is actually a laptop. It's a HP Envy 17 that's completely maxed out on all the specs. It's an incredible machine. It completely replaces any need for a desktop machine because it's so powerful. I edit videos on it and everything. It has one slight little problem in the design, in that I thought they'd make it cleaner by not putting a numlock key on there. And as you can see, it has a full keyboard. So it's got a little numpad off to the side. And somehow, every once in a while, the numlock key gets triggered,
mm-hmm.
and there's no way to turn it back on or off or toggle it so that you can actually use those keys, so then the keys just don't work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three ways to fix this. One is the biggest PETA, which would be to plug in a keyboard, which is no fun to fix it that way.
The other, you showed me,
show the on-screen keyboard. You were telling me this earlier. I brought up the on-screen keyboard thinking, oh, I'm so smart, I can just bring up the on-screen keyboard and hit the numlock key. And it didn't have a numlock on it, but you actually showed me how you get that. There's an options button where show the numeric keypad. And that'll take a little bit more room on the screen, but that's fine for this machine. I got lots of room.
Right. This is what shows up when you just start the on-screen keyboard for the first time. And when you go turn on the numeric keypad, you get a picture that looks similar to your keyboard, except the numlock is turned off. And on regular 102 key keyboards, when the numlock is off, you have arrow keys and home, page up. You turn on numlock, and then you have your number keys again.
So I could do that. The way that I solved it, though, is I use this VB script. I found on some very obscure HP tech support forum, there was a guy, Cernius, who uploaded this little script that you run, and I'll put a a copy of it on the screen, but it just toggles the NumLock key for you. So you just copy it in a notepad, you save it as a VBS extension, and then I stuck it in my startup. So every time I start up my machine, it toggles the NumLock key for me. So simple fixes there.
Well, you just got to hope that it toggles it the right way.
Yeah, I think it toggles it on every time, so either way, I'm good. All right, so let's get to some of these questions. The first thing that we have here from Yitterbium, in some sites I cannot view PDF files. I think this is something to do with IE9, not so likely to be Acrobat as that was there before. What are the suggestions on how to fix this?
So I think when we got this post, it was still before IE9 shipped in this RTM form, in this final version. So in this particular case, my sequence of events, what I usually start to do is uninstall Adobe, uninstall IE9 RC or beta, depending on which version that they had, install IE9, and then install Adobe.
Yeah.
So at that point, you can ensure that Adobe is setting up all of its registrations correctly after IE9 is all done, as opposed to having Adobe installed and then IE9 install over top, which may change settings that Adobe had previously set.
Yeah, and so the latest version of IE9, the latest version of Adobe Reader, and you should be okay. We work well with our partners to make sure those things work, and if you have the latest of both, you should be okay.
There are some interesting potential issues to that one if you're using one of the features in IE9 called pinned sites. Pinned sites is not really supposed to be a shortcut to a site. It's a way to actually segregate your browser session. So you want to use it for things like banking, anytime where you really want to separate what you're doing in one browser window from all of the other browser windows. The other side effect of pinned sites is that it tends to turn off extensions in order to keep it a more sandboxed, safe environment.
Hmm.
So if what you've done is pinned a site, and then from there start opening other sites, all of those other sites will also be will not be segregated, but won't have those extensions turned on.
Yeah, so it's a parent-child thing, and so you should make sure that you start fresh, at least to troubleshoot.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah, you'll want to just start from a regular IE icon and test out those, or an IE shortcut and test out those websites that are having problems. If you turned on any of the ActiveX filtering in IE9, another one of its security mitigations, you can disable that and see if it makes any difference.
And we were both talking about this. I think we would both suggest if you still have problems or if you want to try something else, you can always try Foxit Reader.
Yeah, there are numerous other third-party readers. I personally like Foxit because it's very lightweight.
It's very fast for me.
It's very fast.
That's why I seem to choose it quite a bit.
And it's been very stable across iterations of Windows.
It's the VLC of readers.
Indeed.
Yes. All right, so we've got Al next. He says, jump list for Windows Explorer stops working all of a sudden. Seems to be related to network drives. He's got a three-parter, too, so that's his first one. My suggestion on that one, Al, I know what you're doing. He's probably firing something up, or he could be firing something up that turns off Arrow, which is kind of required for jump lists and Arrow Peak, of course. So make sure that you haven't done something that's set you back to basic, first of all, would be my first suggestion. His second one is Media Center refuses to list any folder except one. Media files show up in both remote media player and using the Xbox video player, but not using Media Center on the Xbox or local remote PCs.
In that case, you'd want to check to see, you know, what is special about that folder. Do you have it set as part of a library, or have you actually added that folder specifically to Media Center to view? What you can do, if it's part of a library, remove it from that library and add it as an explicit folder and see if that changes anything.
And then his third parter is, sometimes accessing our network shares is very slow. Seems to apply to logins, presumably because GPOs are being read from a share. This applies to computers on network, but some are worse than others, and the problems go away when the server is restarted. So this is one where we were talking earlier where we need a lot more information. Is it wired? Is it Wi-Fi? Things like that. Your first suggestion is always check the event logs.
Check the event logs on the server machine first. You say that it works better after it's been rebooted. Is the machine under stress? Is there a lot of existing connections all happening at the same time? Are there AV software that is taking locks on the files that you're trying to access? You might want to check that on both the local and the server machine.
So if he reboots, and then as soon as he determines that that problem is come up again, check the event logs right then.
Absolutely.
Because something's happened, and the sooner, the tighter you can get that time from reboot to it's doing it, that's probably going to help you narrow where your problem is.
If you can isolate that server from the rest of your network, you know, pull it into a lab of some sort and have a network switch that goes dedicated to, say, you know, 5 or 10 machines to that server, see if you can replicate it, take away some of the other extenuating variables.
Excellent. All right, we've got one here from Donald Adams. I did a disk to VHD 1.62 backup of my notebook with VixHal option checked. The OS, Windows XP, is on D. After BIOS boots, I just see a black screen, even in safe mode, after it flashes some drivers loading. I tried to log the boot sequence, but it didn't see any files saved to the file system. I gave up trying, but now my notebook stopped working, and I'd like to be able to boot into the backup that I created.
So this one was an interesting question. So I didn't quite understand all the sequence of events. If you just took the disk to VHD, and then your source drive was no longer able to boot, that seems very weird, because the disk to VHD process shouldn't change anything on the source drive. If you've tried to apply that image back to your source drive, disk to VHD isn't designed to do that. It's designed to take your disk and load it into Virtual PC or Hyper-V. The best thing that you could do with that machine right now is to do what we call an in-place repair. If you have the DVD, that's the best possible way. What you might have as an option, if you hit F8 while you're booting, is a restore image or a recovery image. Don't choose that if this is a, you know, an OEM machine. What that'll do is just replace everything on your hard drive. What you want to do is grab, this is XP, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. What you want to do is grab the XP CD, put it in, and just run an install. Don't change anything. It will reset your system back to a bootable state, but keep your data there. Your applications are probably going to be in a broken state, but that's okay. You'll at least have access to your data again.
All right, so we've got Paul here. Microsoft Media Center cable TV guide stopped updating. It worked for several months, stopped updating about 3 months ago. I called the provider and asked if they'd changed anything, and they said they had not. First thing you want to know is what operating system and correct. Event logs, of course.
So the media update process works as a scheduled task, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, you'd want to, you know, check the event log. The task itself, you know, you can go into task scheduler and see what the status of that task is. It may have just been blocked. It may be crashing. Anything really could be happening there.
And probably rerun the config.
Right. So Media Center has an initial configurator where you can put in your zip code and just run through the basic setup process. That should reset everything back to defaults and then allow you to get your guide data again.
Yeah, and a little note about calling the provider. The cable providers have absolutely nothing to do with the channel guide that comes up in your media center. So
right.
Don't even waste your time calling the provider, because they'll likely just say, huh? What?
Yeah, they don't have any support for media center.
Yeah. So we'll help you out. Just rerun the config and you should be okay. And also the green button too.
Yes, so
greenbutton.com.
I've used that site numerous times over the years. The people that they've got on there are far more experts on Media Center than
they've
I
seen it
ever
all.
Will be.
All right, Man V, maybe you can elaborate a bit on file folder devices in use issue that plagues Windows. I experience it, for example, when I try to compact folders in Outlook Express and Windows XP SP3. Or when I play a WMV from a memory stick with the Windows Media Player.
This one, I mean, I'm hit with this occasionally as well. Not so much on Win 7, XP, and Vista occasionally. The things that you want to look out for are AV software that is holding a handle to one of the files that are on that partition. There are a couple of utilities that you can use. There's handle.exe from sysinternals. Another utility called Process Explorer that you can get from the sysinternal website, the TechNet website. I can show you what that looks like. So this is the Process Explorer tool. And what I like about this is it's very easy to use. What you want to do is you want to find a handle. And what you'd put here is the path to the external drive that you're using, or mm-hmm. a particular file. I use the path to the external drive. I don't have an external drive hooked up, but let's say that it was, you know, your H drive. So you just put in H colon and then hit enter, and then a list of files that were associated to that device would come up. As another example, you know, if I wanted to see what processes were using Shell 32, mm-hmm. I would be able to put in Shell 32 and I'd see all of the processes that had that DLL loaded. And I could see, oh, you know, these ones are in use. When you find something like that, you can right-click on it. Actually, you can see what it is in this lower pane, and you could right-click on it, check the properties, you know, see where it's coming from. You can also close a handle on here in this list as well, and that would stop whatever process it was keeping that file open. And then from there, you can remove the device.
And for a thumb drive that's being held up, mm-hmm. do you know if I have a bunch of videos on that thumb drive and it's going through and painting the thumbnails for mm-hmm. them one at a time, is that considered locked?
That would be considered locked for that duration.
That could be one of the things, too.
Absolutely. Especially if you've accessed those files. It shouldn't just populate those thumbnails across the entire drive if you haven't accessed that folder in Explorer.
Yeah.
But yes, if you've done a lot of image files or a lot of video files, that could be the cause.
I have seen that. From Lorenz, my PC, Windows 7 Home Premium, sometimes gets in a state where a key press behaves as if you would press a Windows key at the same time as pressing the other key. For example, I press E and the Windows Explorer opens because the computer acts as if I had pressed Windows E. I must terminate the state by pressing the Windows key 2 times in sequence. Maybe important to say, I work a lot with terminal sessions, more than one is open at the same time, and I do very few things on my physical PC itself. The environments of terminal sessions are itself virtualized, Hyper-V. I think it has to do with these terminal sessions, but I'm not sure.
So actually, an important part of his paragraph was that he uses remote desktop or terminal services. Mm-hmm. And this is actually something that we've found too, and it's an extremely difficult problem to actually pin down.
Yeah.
But we do have it, and we've root caused it, so this is a known issue to us. At this point in time, really the only thing that you can do is just hit the Win key and then to get out of that state.
Yeah. Martin Mine, next question. I have a question regarding drivers and Windows Update. Many manufacturers update their drivers now and then. Many of these updates are not available on Windows Update. Therefore, other services and sites such as Driver Agent and StationDriver.com exist. In most cases, these sites contain the latest driver for your hardware. So some of these other sites, how come they don't get published on Windows Update is the question.
So the short answer is it's extremely complex on how you get a driver up onto Windows Update. The slightly longer response to that is, what type of machine is it? If mm-hmm. you've purchased an OEM machine, what we call an OEM machine is somebody or a machine that was purchased from Dell, HP, any of the big names, and you know, it's a bundled unit, you buy it and you go forth. Or if you've built the machine yourself. So when you purchase a machine from an OEM, you know, they have parts that are not just from them. They have parts from Intel, ATI, NVIDIA. You know, they have different manufacturers. They manufacture the motherboard, the memory. All of that stuff gets put together in a particular unit. Now, when they release that system, they have to test all of the drivers. So what they don't want to do is, you know, 6 months, a year down the line, is have multiple machines with varying drivers installed on their system, because it's a lot harder to support.
Yeah.
The landscape becomes very difficult. So what they tend to do is they say, you know, the machine that we ship is the machine that we ship. That is it for the drivers. If there are critical issues that come about during their life cycle, you know, yes, they will publish those drivers to Windows Update because they get the maximum amount of coverage. Those are really critical sort of issues, or issues related to performance or reliability or compatibility. Now, yes, you can go and go to any of these sites and pick up a different driver. Could be very, very much more updated or just slightly more updated. The thing that you risk, though, is that driver was not tested with this hardware configuration. If, for example, you had hardware or a driver version 1.3 for foo driver, mm-hmm. that particular driver may have a patch to a particular quirk in the hardware that machine requires. or that particular line of machine requires. If you change that driver, it may not have that patch that was, you know, requested by the OEM, in which case you can have now weird issues down the line that nobody can test for, you know, nobody would understand without real debugging.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, the relationship between Microsoft, the OEM, the driver vendors, we all work together trying to figure out, you know, when is the best time to push out an update to a driver. Because of the number of users that it will hit, they want to make sure that what they produce is going to be rock solid.
Yeah. So one of the best tips that I give people is I have a thumb drive and I've got a directory on my machine at home.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes time to update the drivers on my machines, I will update a driver and then I leave it in kind of like a holding area. And mm-hmm. if that driver ends up working really well, I have this master directory that's like main machine drivers, and I'll drop it into there, replace the drivers that I have.
Mm-hmm.
But not until I've used a driver for a while does it get put in there.
Right.
And it's a really good thing that I do that, because some of the later drivers that come out for things, and I'm specifically talking about this Sound Blaster card I've got at home,
mm-hmm.
there's a very old Windows 7 driver for it that works perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And every other driver that they've put out since then has issues with it. So I keep this one driver in this directory, so it's like these are the golden drivers. These are the places I go when I have to flatten my machine. That's a good thing for every machine you have.
That's essentially the exact same process that an OEM does.
Yeah.
They go and they vet their drivers, they do continual testing. When they get an update, they test and test and test and figure out, well, is this something that we want to incorporate?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
You can imagine how hairy a machine could get if, you know, you're updating video drivers, sound drivers, fingerprint drivers, card drivers, BIOSes, all independently of each other.
And then one thing doesn't work, and you're in troubleshooting nightmare.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The driver places that you listed, you kind of have to be, you know, cautious about them, because
yeah.
they're not coming from the original manufacturer. You don't really know what's in there.
Yeah.
You know, yes, you could. It could say that it doesn't have any viruses or what have you, but it could be repackaged with something else entirely.
Yeah.
It may not be a virus, but it could still hork your machine.
Yeah, yeah, there is that. And anything that wants you to sign up for a service or pay for a driver, I would just right there as the indicator you want to go somewhere else.
There is something that isn't normally set for Windows Update, where you can have access to updated drivers faster.
Mm-hmm.
So I set my machine up like this all the time. If you go into Windows Update and change settings, you can make this check mark, give me recommended updates, the same way I receive important updates.
Mm-hmm.
So that essentially promotes a lot of driver installs. It wouldn't normally show up for you. You'd have to do a lot more indirected searching for it.
Mm-hmm.
This way it brings it up more in your face, and you know, I will search continually for new drivers and apply them as necessary.
Cool, and that's in the settings on the left side of your Windows Update.
Yep.
Cool. All right, so next question from Charles Torrey, Carmine. Why does Windows 7 take so long to determine a user has entered the wrong session login account password when the machine is not domain joined? I assume in domain join case, Windows tries to authenticate the domain, waits for a network auth request to timeout.
It depends. Are you doing this right when the machine is booting up,
mm-hmm.
or are you waiting for a while before you're entering your password? Because with Windows 7, there is this asynchronous mode of starting up services. So there, when it's checking against your login ID,
mm-hmm.
Not all the services may have started up already.
Yeah.
But you can, again, as with most things, check the event log under the security node and see if there is any errors that showed up. There may also be a service that isn't starting in time and is timing out before it can properly check.
And I have noticed this. You know, you're riding in your car, you boot up your machine, it's domain joined, you log in, you hit enter, and you know, I know I just typed one thing wrong on my password,
mm-hmm.
and it takes a couple seconds for it to come up and say incorrect password, and you'd think it'd say, hey, you know, just check the password, you know if it's right or not on the machine. So I think he's wondering, is it trying to go out and check the domain again to see if you've changed your password and you're on a different machine, or
that would be one
like
of the
that.
Things. If it doesn't match your cached password, it will try and go onto the domain and and authenticate it.
Okay.
Windows 7 reliably drops my home Wi-Fi connection. My home router is dropped from the list of available networks, so the connection is dropped. Over time, it reappears, or I run the network diagnostics wizard, and it generally solves the problem, resets the adapter, etc. This happens across PCs running Windows 7 Ultimate and Home Premium. My Windows Phone 7 devices do not experience this, nor does my iPhone when connected to my home Wi-Fi network. Thus, my assumption is that the issue is with Windows 7 and not my Wi-Fi router.
I don't know of any existing bugs where, you know, machines are reliably dropping the Wi-Fi connection. Usually when this kind of thing occurs, I try and check what the device drivers are. Are they up to date?
And I wouldn't assume anything with Charles Torrey's. You never know what's going on in that house. So.
When this happens, you know, what band are you in? Are you in the 2.4 gigahertz band? Or are you in the 5 gigahertz band? If you have a microwave going off, or if those machines are particularly close to your neighbors and they have the microwave going.
Microwave is the number one killer of both, you know, the
microwave
cordless
and
phones.
Cordless phones.
And, yeah.
Yep. One thing that you can test to see, you know, if your router is, you know, Windows compliant or if it has any known issues is it is the Internet Connectivity Evaluation Tool. If you go here, it'll run a little ActiveX control and it'll tell you, you know, if your home router might have any issues with Windows or if it's slightly off spec. Even though your iPhone and your other devices may not have an issue with that particular router, you should still check to see if there's an updated firmware for it.
Yeah.
Most of the time when I've seen those types of issues, it is a combination of the driver and the router.
And probably another good thing to check on this to help troubleshoot is, do you have, you know, 5 bars on your signal
Absolutely.
Indicator? Mm-hmm. Because if you've got 1 bar and then you're reliably dropped, mm-hmm. that kind of tells you right there that that's your problem. You're too far away from it. But if you have 5 bars and it's dropping, that's probably another thing, which I have seen the 5 bars and then, you know, the wife turns on the microwave and next thing you know, you're waiting for a page to load.
Absolutely. Are you using N? Are you using B or G? You know, you can test to see those different combinations.
So check your firmware, try this tool out, mm-hmm. and more information, of course.
Yeah, I like to see log files.
Yeah.
You know, if you run the network troubleshooter and that fixes it, that's kind of interesting. It really shouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, unless it just really needs a reset, and I'd suspect your hardware or your driver on the machine.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so we've got C. Kurtz. Windows Live Messenger sometimes logs me in and does not show any of my contacts online. If I log into another machine or web messenger, I do see contacts online. I also sometimes appear offline to others while I'm clearly online from my point of view.
That one's really interesting. Are you using the latest version of Windows Live 2011? I believe that different machines can save their state whether or not you log in offline. If there's a problem signing you in, you can appear to be online but not truly be online. So you might want to toggle your state. And you can turn on logging in Messenger itself. It's in one of the options. You can turn on extensive diagnostics. And we do recommend you opting into the customer experience program because that will additionally turn on extra logging and allow our folks back here to get an aggregate log. We don't get personal information or anything like that, but we get a sampled data about what types of issues are happening out in the wild. You know, mm-hmm. do we have to adjust anything?
And he has a second part of his question. Windows Media Center doesn't show all files I include in the video library, although it is shared read and write for the entire home group. Some folders are on the PC's internal hard drive and some are in folders on external hard drives.
Are you sure that these are files that Media Center can actually show? So it's not able to show each and every file type. You know, are you mixing file types there that, you know, might show in Media Player Classic or VLC? So, you know, Media Center won't necessarily show everything that's there.
Yeah.
Are you certain that the network shares are live when you're in Media Center? Are you sharing under a different shared or saved password? So if you have multiple users and on your machine and you've shared it out as a particular user, but you haven't logged in with that particular user, you might not see those files.
And from a troubleshooting standpoint, you probably want to look, are the ones that aren't showing up, are they ones on the external hard drive, or are they ones on the internal hard drive? And if it's kind of a combination of both, that you can kind of rule that out. But if it's definitely one or the other, that's going to give you a good spot, a toehold to start with.
Absolutely.
All right, and that's the show for this week. Thank you, Gove.
Thank you.
And if you have any questions or you need some support or some help troubleshooting things, you can either leave us a comment in this week's show, or you can send us an email at defragshow@microsoft.com.